Well, good morning to everyone. It is time to begin our study this morning. It's 9:45 Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to continue this morning with the sugya that we began at the end of last week's session. The sugya of the machloket of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, relating to the first Mishnah in Perek Gimel in Kiddushin. And if you all recall, the Mishnah, in its second case, brought us the issue of a man who says to a woman, Hareyat mekudeshet li le'achar shloshim yom, uba acher betoch shloshim yom v'kidsha mekudeshet l'sheni, that a man who intervenes in a delayed action kiddushin is zocheh v'kiddushin, because the woman is still single until the delay element of the first kiddushin takes effect. And on this basis, we have in the Gemara a question. What happens if no man intervenes in the time of the delayed Kiddushin, but rather the woman during that period of time decides to change her mind and not accept the Kiddushin? Does she have the right to do that or not? And Rabbi Yochanan said, Chozeret, she may change her mind. And Reish Lakish says, Eina Chozeret, that she may not. And we noted that on each of these two Piskei Halakha, that we have editions of the Stamet Gemara. On Rabbi Yochanan, after the word Chozeret, it says, Ati Dibur Umivatel Dibur. And on Reish Lakish, it says, Lo Ati Dibur Umivatel Dibur. And that these are editions of the Stamet. This is Perush HaMemra of the Stamet Gemara, which is interpreting Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's argument as an argument whether speech can cancel speech. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish themselves only gave the Piskei Halakha, and the Stamet de Gemara gave the Perush of the Svara of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now, following that first expression of Piskei Halakha, we have in the Gemara an exchange of questions between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And at each one of these questions, we also have the addition of Perusha Memra by the Stamet Gemara. And as we will see, the questions flow very nicely from Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's opinions, and the Perush of the questions by the Stamet Gemara flows very well from the Perush of the Piskei Din at the beginning of the Sugya. Let's take a look. The three questions that are presented can be found in your Bivadim setup of the Sugya in lines 6, 8, and 10. Let's take a look at the first question on line number 6. Etive Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan questioned Reish Lakish. Bitel, im ad shelo taram bitel, ein trumato truma. Rabbi Yochanan quotes a Mishnah from Masechet Trumot, which says that if a man sent an agent to separate Trumot and Masrot for him from his field, and then while the agent was on his way to the field, the one who sent him canceled the agency, and then after the cancellation of the agent separated Trumot and Masrot, that his separation of Trumot and Masrot is ineffective because his agency had been canceled. And Rabbi Yochanan is, of course, from this Mishnah, implying or challenging Reish Lakish that here you see that the man who appointed the agent with speech may cancel the agent in the same way, and this would imply that the woman, because she accepted the Kiddushin, she may then not accept the Kiddushin as long as it has not yet been effective. We do not have in the level of the Amoraic material any answer of Reish Lakish to this question of Rabbi Yochanan. We have only the question. But the Stamet de Gemara answers in Reish Lakish's name and says, Veha Hacha answers, Shani Nitinat Ma'ot Liadisha, Dechi Ma'aseh Damu, Velo Ati Dibur Umivatel Ma'aseh. That is, the Stamet de Gemara interprets the case that the case of Truma is different than the case of Kiddushin that we have at the beginning of our Sugya. Because in Kiddushin, the giving of money into the hand of the woman for the sake of Kiddushin is not speech, it's more like an action, and her dibur of cancellation after that fact cannot cancel the action of receiving the money. Now, this is a very odd thing, because if you notice, the Stamma de Gemara has changed its definitions. At the beginning of our sugya, Reish Lakish said, "Alo ati dibur umevatel dibur," that everything was considered dibur. Both her acceptance of the money was considered dibur, and her cancellation was considered dibur. But now, under the influence of the kushya from Trumot, we have a change in the definitions, and now the Stamma de Gemara is saying that the case of kiddushin is not dibur, it's ma'aseh. And this is in order to maintain the machloket of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish with its questions in the context of the Stamma that wants to interpret our sugya as a chakira of dibur versus dibur. Then comes the second question of Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish in line number 8. Etivin hashodech get liishto v'higia b'shaliach o sheshalach acharav shaliach v'amar lo get shenatati lach batel hu hareza batel. So here a man sends a shaliach to his wife with a get, and then he afterwards catches up with the shaliach himself, or he sends a secondary shaliach who catches up with the primary shaliach and informs him that the get that he gave him is unacceptable, is now been cancelled. The get is cancelled. And the Gemara in 8 bet is now explaining it in accordance with the explanation of the Stamma all along. Taha netinat get liyad shaliach dechi netinat ma'ot liyad isha dame v'katani ariza betel. That however you want to define the giving of the money into the hand of the woman, that the giving of the get into the hand of the shaliach is the same. And nevertheless, we find that it can be cancelled. So this is, seems to be an even stronger question against Reish Lakish. The Stamma, again, saves Reish Lakish by providing an answer in his name, and says, Hatam name kokama delo matagita liyada, dibur v'diburhu, ati dibur umevetel dibur. Here, the answer of the Stamma de Gemara is that the giving of the get into the hand of the shaliach is fundamentally different than the giving of money into the hand of the woman, because the giving of the get into the hand of the shaliach does not affect the gerushin until the get receives is received by the woman herself. It's still considered dibur. And therefore, dibur can cancel dibur. But in the case of kiddushin, the kiddushin is effective from the time that the act of kiddushin is completed from the time that the woman receives the money for kiddushin in her hand. And it's just not effective technically for 30 days. But there's nothing lacking in the action itself. Whereas by the get, there is something lacking in the action, because the get has not yet been received by the woman. And this brings us to the end of the second question. Then Reish Lakish asks a third question. This time, his question, of course, is against Rabbi Yochanan. And he says, Kol hakilim yordim liyadei tumatan b'machshava, ve'ein ulim miyadei tumatan ele v'shinui ma'aseh. Ma'aseh motzi miyad ma'aseh umiyad machshava. Machshava in motzia lo miyad maaseh velo miyad machshava. This is quoting from the Tosefta of Masechet Kilim, dealing with an issue of the potential of a kli to accept tum'ah or not, based on at what point it is finished. That if a potter is making a kli, and he decides at a certain point, he thinks that the kli is completed, from the time that he thinks the kli is completed, it is now able to accept tum'ah. But then later, if he wants to say, now I don't want this kli to be considered completed, that thinking that it's not completed is not enough to cancel his initial thought that it is completed, that he has to do an action on the kli, some kind of change in the kli to demonstrate a change of his initial intention. And so the Tosefta concludes that action can cancel action, and it can cancel thought. But thought cannot cancel action or thought. And then the Stamma de Gemara goes on to explain that in this case, that Vishlama miyad ma'aseh lo mafka delo ati dibur umevetel ma'aseh ela miyad machshava miha tapik, that even though we could say that the thought cannot cancel an action, that it should be able to cancel another thought. And so from this, Reish Lakish wants to prove that in the same way that thought cannot cancel thought, speech cannot cancel speech. And this would therefore imply that his psak halacha, that the woman cannot be chozeret, is correct. Now all three of these questions, if you note, we have only the questions, we do not have answers in the sugya from the Amoraim themselves. We only have their questions, and their questions consist of quotations of Tanaitic material, not logical questions, but precedental questions based on Piskei Din and other areas of halacha brought by the Tanaim. The Stamma de Gemara, in each case, attempts to interpret the Tanaitic quotation in a manner in keeping with the original setup of the sugya by the Stamma, which is that the question here is Dibur Mivatel Dibur, or Dibur is not Mivatel Dibur, that Dibur can cancel speech, or it cannot cancel its own speech. Now, what is actually going on here? If you remember in this previous sugya that we learned, I discussed the phenomenon of sugya muldeshet, that is, of a one sugya overlaid on top of the other, that you have an amoreik sugya, and after the amoreik sugya, you have a stamma sugya, which is discussing something slightly different, which is now overlaying itself on top of the amoreik sugya, and attempting to apply the amoreik sugya categories to its own conceptual search. Here we have a clear example of this, because Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, in the course of their exchanges at this first half of the sugya, they do not express themselves on the level of svara at all, only on the level of piskei din. But the Stamma de Gemara sets up the piskei din as a conceptual dispute, not a dispute in a concrete, specific psak halacha, but in an abstract, conceptual dispute on whether dibur is mevatel dibur, which apparently would have applications in many other areas of halacha. And then, as each component of the sugya is brought up, whether it be one question, or the second question, or the third question, in all of these cases, the Stamma de Gemara interprets the questions in order to keep the discussion of dibur, to mevatel dibur, alive on its level. Now, why is it doing this? Why is the Stamma de Gemara attempting to apply conceptual categories to the sugya when it is not at all apparent from the words of the Amoraim that this is the conceptual discussion that they were having? And I think the answer to this question, would anyone like to suggest an answer before I do? Either by pressing down your transmit button and speaking, or by typing into the chat box. Why is the Stamma de Gemara overlaying a hakira about dibur mevatel dibur on top of the amoreik piskei din? What would you like to suggest? Do we have any suggestions? No, not yet. All right. Well, then I'll suggest mine. I'd like to suggest, we have Teddy in Brooklyn who's suggesting that was the halacha they were discussing. In other words, if I understood you correctly, Teddy, what you mean to say was that they were discussing the halacha of whether dibur can be mevatel dibur, whether speech can cancel speech. And Tuvia in Miami says you have three issues: thought, speech, and action. Yes, that's right, you do. And that they're discussing the issue of speech. Now, why are they discussing the issue of speech? Because in the Tanaitic material that they had in front of them, there were discussions of thought and its relationship to other modes of behavior, and they had information about action. But the question is not only about thought and about action. They want to know what's the status of speech. Is speech considered to be like thought? Or is speech considered to be like action? And this Amoreik Sugya, because it's dealing with something which is kind of similar to speech, but kind of similar to action, is an opportunity for the Stamaim to overlay. They're able to overlay their Hakira about speech into the Sugya. Now, Tuvia in Miami has said, what is taking place here? What is her initial action? The woman's initial action is that she accepted money in her hand from a man, money that was earmarked for the sake of Kiddushin. And the question is her acceptance of the money an action? Is it speech? Is it considered speech because she's expressed her willingness to be mit kadeshet, at least in principle? It's certainly not thought, because it's not only thought, because her thought has gone further than thought. It's been translated into some kind of acceptance on her part, either through speech or through action. So we're not sure, but in any event, we have this discussion in the Stamma de Gemara. Now, if we go further in the sugya, we'll see that we have kind of a surprise. Tuvia in Miami is saying the act of marriage is an intentional act. She cannot take money and not be married. Well, Tuvia, that's generally correct. But in this case, she took money for an act of kiddushin which does not take place for 30 days. And now she wants to, well, she's still single, she wants to go back on what her original intention was and not accept the kiddushin. So you'll say, well, then what's the status of the money? So you'll say the money would either be a gift or a loan, depending on the emotional state of the man who gave it to her and her relationship with him. And she'll either have to pay it back or she won't have to pay it back, but it won't be for the sake of kiddushin if she changes her mind. That's exactly the question Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are discussing. Does she have the right to change her mind? Because the action is not really complete until the kiddushin is effective 30 days later. Now, if you just take a look after the stama is completed, and because in component number 11 in your Rivadim sheets, the issue of machshava is explained the same way that the stama answered Rabbi Yochanan's questions for Reish Lakish. Now the stama is answering Reish Lakish's question for Rabbi Yochanan. It's saying that you cannot compare the area of tuma and tahara to any other area of halakha, because in tuma, it's the very nature of tuma and tahara that thought has the effective effective equivalent of action, because the minute the potter thinks the kli is done, it's as if he finished it with his hands. So therefore, you cannot ask a kushya from tuma and tahara onto our area of kiddushin. And this is explained further in component number 11 by quoting, the stama quotes a limud of Rav Papa to back this up, that thought in tuma has the status of action. We won't learn it right now, it's less relevant. It's an insertion of the stama that is a proof for something we've already explained. But let's go to component number 12. In component number 12, the entire sugya gets turned on end. Because here's Rav Zvid, and if you know your generations, you'll know that Rav Zvid is a fifth generation Babylonian Amora. That is, he's reacting to the machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish from three generations before. And Rav Zvid is coming and saying, hey, wait a minute, this machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which you're attempting to apply to the Mishnah in the third parak of Kiddushin, I have a tradition that this machloket does not apply to that Mishnah at all. It applies to a completely different Mishnah, a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Kiddushin, which says, V'chein hi shenatna reshut lishlucha lekatsha, v'halcha hi v'kitshat atzma, im shela kadmu kiddushia kiddushin, v'im shel shlucha kadmu en kiddushia kiddushin. That it's not where a man proposed kiddushin to a woman and she accepted it, but it was delayed for 30 days and she's coming back on herself. It's not that at all. The question is that if the woman appointed an agent to accept her kiddushin from the man, in the same way that the man can appoint an agent to give it, the kiddushin, to her, the woman can appoint an agent to receive it from him. So she's appointed an agent to receive her kiddushin. And this kiddushin, this agent for receipt of kiddushin, goes on his way to meet either the husband or the agent of the husband. Now, in the meantime, however, the woman decided that she was going to go and accept kiddushin from someone else, not from the man who's going to meet her agent, or whose agent is going to meet her agent, but rather she's going to accept kiddushin from man number two. Now the question is, to whom is she mekudeshet? Is she mekudeshet to the one from whom she herself accepted kiddushin? Or is she mekudeshet to the first man because her agent, her duly appointed agent, has accepted kiddushin from him for her, on her behalf? And the Mishnah simply says it depends what happened first. If her duly appointed agent accepted kiddushin on her behalf from the first man before she herself accepted kiddushin from the second man, then she'll be mekudeshet to man number one. But if she accepted kiddushin on her own behalf from man number two before her agent accepted from man number one, then she'll be mekudeshet to man number two. On this Mishnah, we have the machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Lo kichat atzmav chazra ba'mau. What happens if she was not mikadesh herself to another man, to man number two, but she decided to revoke the agency that she sent to accept kiddushin for man number one? In other words, she's not going back as she did in the first rendition of the machloket on an act of accepting money from a man, but she's revoking an agency that she herself appointed to accept that kiddushin. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Chozeret, she may go back on herself and cancel that shlichut. And Reish Lakish says, Eina Chozeret, she may not cancel that shlichut once appointed. And then the Gemara goes on line 17, again interprets the machloket as a question of dibur mivatel dibur. Only here, the interpretation of dibur mivatel dibur is closer to the actual nature of the machloket itself. Because in the first rendition that we had of the machloket, the woman had accepted money into her hand, and as Tuvia from Miami told us, the act of marriage is an intentional act. You can't take money and not be married. But in this case, she hasn't taken money. All she's done is appointed an agent to accept the money for her. And she wants to cancel the agency before the agent has accepted the money. Now the question is the appointment of an agent an act, or is the appointment of an agent a speech? And we can see that the machloket of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, as interpreted by the Stama, seems to be more relevant. Not completely relevant, but more relevant. And then, if you look, starting with line number 18, we see that the three questions that were asked in rendition 1 of the Sugya have now come back on rendition number 2. We have, for instance, Rabbi Yochanan asking the first question from Masechet Trumot about a man who appoints a shaliach to be mafrish Trumot and Masrot for him, and then he changes his intention and cancels the shlichut. And here, this would appear to be an extremely strong question against Reish Lakish, because this case is almost exactly the same as the woman who's appointed a shaliach to accept her kiddushin from the man. And the Mishnah in Trumot says clearly that the agency is cancelled as long as he hasn't been mafrish Trumot and Masrot first. So there we have Rava coming in to explain on Reish Lakish's behalf that kegon shekadam balabayit v'taramit kiryo, that the case of Trumot is not simply a case where the man, by his speech, cancelled the agency that he created earlier, but rather the man went and actually separated Trumot and Masrot on his own from the field before the agent could do so. So his action changed the efficacy of the agency that he appointed. It wasn't just that he changed it by saying, I cancel your shlichut. He went and he accomplished the deed himself, so there was no point anymore for the shlichut. The shlichut was now completely without context and without purpose. Then the Gemara comes and brings us Reish Lakish's question, the one from Tuman Tara, and it is rejected again because of the uniqueness of thought in Tuma as opposed to thought in any other halachic area. So the question is again rejected. And then we have as the third question, the second question of Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish about Gittin, where he says that if a get was sent by a shaliach, then and he sent another shaliach or caught up with the shaliach in advance before the get was delivered to the woman, that he's able to be mevatel the shlichut and the get as long as it has not yet been received by the woman herself. And this, the Gemara says on line number 22, is considered to be a complete refutation of Reish Lakish, because in this case we're dealing with gittin, which is similar to kiddushin. They're both dealing with the marital relationship. And in addition, we have an explicit statement that as long as the get has not been received into the hand of the woman, that it can be cancelled. In the same way that the kiddushin, as it has not yet been accepted by the agent of the woman, can also still be cancelled. The woman can go back on herself. Now, what has actually happened here is several very interesting phenomena that we need to discuss. That will be relevant to many sugyot that we will learn in the future. The first is that the Amoreik Sukhi itself, let's leave all of the Stamba discussion about Dibur Mevatel Dibur aside and only relate to the Amoreik material. Do you all see that the Amoreik Sugya, the Machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and the three questions that were asked in two directions, that they remain constant in both versions, in the first version in the Sugya, as well as in the second version brought by Rav Svid on the Mishnah in Perek Dalet of Kiddushin? The Amoreik kernel has remained the same. The issue is, to what does it apply? Does it apply to the Mishnah in Perek Gimel? Or does it apply to the Mishnah in Perek Dalet? How does such a thing happen? Why is there a doubt to which Mishnah the Machloket of the Amoraim applies? So the way that this happens is that the Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, of course, were in Eretz Yisrael. They were in Tveria. They were not in Babylonia. How did their Machloket come to Babylonia? Through the good offices of the Nachotai, those who descended from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, and went back to Eretz Yisrael, and in each place they brought the Torah from their home academy. So when they came from the Beit Midrash in Tveria to Babel, they brought Torah Eretz Yisrael with them. And when they got to Babel and they brought Torah Eretz Yisrael with them, and when they displayed the Machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in Babel, and they were asked by those who were listening to them, tell me, this Machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, to what does it refer? So they said, oops, we're not sure. It seems that it refers to the Mishnah and Perek Gimel. So in that case, the Bavlim, who received the Machloket by transfer through the Nachotai, had to analyze the Machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish on the Mishnah in Perek Gimel, because according to the tradition they received, it was relevant to that Mishnah. Then Rav Zvid comes along and says, wait a minute, but I've received an alternative tradition from Eretz Yisrael that the Machloket is not relevant to the Mishnah in Perek Gimel, it's relevant to the Mishnah in Perek Dalet. And he has therefore has a different context for the Machloket, and the Machloket works much more smoothly than it did in the first rendition. So we have Torah Eretz Yisrael coming to Babel, and what was not clear to the Bavlim is what was the context to which the Machloket refers, to which Mishnah. And this is very common. There are many, many cases of this in the Bavli where they receive an Amoraic tradition, but they're not sure to what it refers. So the Teddy in Brooklyn is asking, so Rav Zvid is at the same time as the Stama? No, certainly not. The Stama de Gemara is much later, probably three generations after Rav Zvid. Rav Zvid is fifth generation, and the Stama de Gemara begins at the end of eighth generation, or even into the first generations of the Rabbanan Savorai. And therefore, all Rav Zvid is saying is he has an alternative context for the Machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and he simply reports it. And as a general rule, you should all be aware that any time the Gemara brings two renditions of an Amoraic argument or statement, either by saying, like it does here, that so-and-so matni la aha, teaches it on another source, or with the language of Lishna Achrina, or the language of Ika de Amre, or the language of Ika de Matne, with all of those languages of bringing alternative renditions of Amoraic material, the Gemara is edited in such a way that the preferred rendition is always the one that's brought second or last. And this is for didactic reasons, because in the course of the lesson, the last mentioned rendition is the one most remembered, and that is the one that will therefore be presented, where the accurate one will be presented. And all of us as teachers know that when we are teaching a class, we first want to present something that can be rejected by analysis, and then something else that would be rejected by analysis, until at the end we come to the final answer which works. And that's the way they organize their lessons also. And the sugyot that we have are really lessons that were taught orally in the Batei Medrash of the last Amoraim or the first Savoraim. Now Eitan Diamond is asking from Toronto a general question. He's saying, at the time when these halachot were being decided, what would they have practically done with a case of this double kiddushin? Would a woman be punished for being married to two men? More broadly, how did they decide a halacha case when there were plainly two differing opinions? Well, Eitan, what they would do is that every Talmid Chacham in his location would paskin according to what he feels is appropriate, the way that rabbis do today. And that psak would be binding on anyone in his community. If the issue of the differing piski halakha, the differing opinions, would then be brought at a later time before the Sanhedrin, which still existed in the time of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the Sanhedrin, if it chose to do so, could weigh in on the issue and make a determination which would then be binding for all as a hora'ah klal Yisraelit. We don't have a record in the sugya of the Sanhedrin doing so. We only have the machloket of the different opinions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which may imply that the machloket was only hypothetical and not actual, and therefore the Sanhedrin did not feel a need to weigh in on it. Eitan is now asking, and a record would be indicated as, I'm not sure I understand your question, but apparently the if you're asking how would the psak din of the Amora be recorded, well, the way that the Gemara would record it would be that the students of the Amora would be passing his psak halacha down from one generation to the next, and that would record his opinion for posterity. And the same way that the other Amora would be passing it down to his students. At any given point in time after that, if an actual case came before Sanhedrin, then the Sanhedrin would have to determine according to whom it passes. Lacking Sanhedrin, as we do today, unfortunately, we would then have to decide according to whom we paskin, based on what's called klale hora'a, that is, general approaches according to whom we paskin when there's a machloket between A and B. And in this case, because we have a general klal, that Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish halachak Rabbi Yochanan, in this case, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, now, in any event, this is the first methodological point about this sugya, which is that whenever you have two renditions of Amoraic material, the second or last rendition will always be considered preferable by the editors of the Amoraic material. That's number one. So the second rendition of Torah Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish here is preferable to the first. As I mentioned before, the case of the woman appointing a shaliach to accept Kiddushin and then changing her mind on that is much closer to what we're talking about in the Machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish than is the first rendition, where she's actually accepted into her hand Kesef Kiddushin from man number one. Now, the second methodological point is the issue of this sugya muldeshet, of this overlaid sugya. Because, now, Eliyahu Kirstel from Toronto was saying regarding the side issue raised by Eitan, but if an error was made by a lower Beitin, wouldn't one of the marriages of the woman be void, and perhaps wouldn't she require tshuva and kapara, and given that the error was not of a Sanhedrin, then the korbanot and horayot would not apply? Okay, well, Rav Eliyahu, when you say an error was made by a lower Beit Din, what do you mean by that? When the Beit Din paskins, then the Beit Din, the psak of the Beit Din holds, unless it's brought up further up the ranks to the Sanhedrin, to the higher Sanhedrin, which would then cancel it and correct it as an error. Would the woman require tshuva? Well, not necessarily, or kapara, not necessarily, because she hasn't all, she's accepted money, but nothing has happened yet. They haven't lived together yet. She hasn't had relations with him. So therefore, there's no reason to, at this point, it's all on the level of the financial transaction, which may hold or may be, may evaporate into thin air based on what its status is. Now, as far as this overlaid sugya, if you note, both in rendition 1 and in rendition 2, the Gemara is interested in applying the chakira of dibur mevatel dibur to this sugya. And to try and resolve for itself the issue of whether dibur has the status of action or whether it only has the status of thought. This is an issue, of course, that was left over from previous times that was not completely resolved, and therefore the Stum is analyzing it. However, was this the svara of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish? Is this what they were arguing about? And if you take a look in the Yerushalmi, in the Israeli Talmud, to the Machloket of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, which appears several places in the Yerushalmi. By the way, you know where it appears in the Yerushalmi? It appears on the Mishnah in Trumot. It appears on the Mishnah in Gittin. That is, it appears in those two places and on the Mishnah in Kiddushin. That is, it appears on all those places where from which questions were asked in the Sugya between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In other words, we have evidence then from the Yerushalmi, not only for the complete authenticity of the Machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, we have evidence in the Yerushalmi for the authenticity of the questions, because the questions represent the places that were discussed in Eretz Yisrael with reference to the Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that is Trumot and Gittin. We don't have Yerushalmi on Taharot, and therefore it's impossible for us to decide whether or not the question from Kalim was as authentic, but we have no reason to believe that it isn't, because if the other two were, there's no reason that the question from Kalim wouldn't be as authentic as well. But what is very interesting in the Yerushalmi is that the Svara of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish is not presented as whether or not Dibur Mevatel Dibur, but rather the Machloket in the Yerushalmi is whether Adam Mevatel Shlichuto Badvarim, whether a person can cancel a shlichut that he has appointed with words. Now, there's not a general conceptual abstract machloket whether dibur mevatel dibur in all cases, but rather whether dibur of appointing shlichut can be canceled by dibur canceling shlichut. In other words, it's a machloket in svara about shlichut, not about dibur. It's about a type of dibur in shlichut. Now, why is this so significant? It's significant because, first of all, as I've taught you in the past, Amoraim relate to concrete halachic issues, not to abstract conceptualizations, on the whole. I'm not saying there aren't cases like that, but on the whole, they don't relate to conceptual abstractions. They relate to specific concrete issues in halacha. And they paskin, yes, no, asur, mutar, tame, tahor, choseret, ena choseret, like here. So what the Yerushalmi is saying to us is that the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish was whether or not, in the specific case of shlichut, whether a shlichut once appointed can be cancelled by the shaleach. That's the issue. And therefore, it's relevant to which rendition of the machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, in which of these two renditions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, is the issue whether the person involved can cancel agency. The first edition of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, so the woman has accepted money in her hand from the man, or the second, where the woman has appointed an agent to accept the money on her behalf. In which of these two renditions does the svara brought in Yerushalmi apply? Any answers? From Toronto, from Brooklyn. It's a shlichut issue. Jeff Kruperman is saying from Cherry Hill. It's the second one, which is a shlichut issue. He is correct. That's right. That Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the argument as brought in Yerushalmi, is relevant to the second rendition in the Bavli, which is as we originally assumed that the second rendition would be the more accurate. And that what is being discussed is shlichut, whether the dibur of appointment of shlichut can be cancelled by dibur. And therefore, although the machloket, as brought by the Stamma de Gemara in the Bavli, whether dibur mevatel dibur, is not unrelated to the original svara, what it has done, it has conceptualized the original context beyond its original framework of shlichut to anything having to do with dibur, and it has abstracted the machloket. Now, why has the Stamma done that? Because the role of the Stamma de Gemara is to abstract and conceptualize Amoraic Piske Din. And if you recall, I explained that the reason why that is because by the year 500, by the end of the Amoraic period, not only the Sanhedrin had been closed, it was closed in 425, but also all of the Smuchin, all of those who had Smicha from the Sanhedrin, have now died off. And we have no more Hora'ah. We have no more Sikah Klal Yisraelit with the authority of Sanhedrin. What we have now is only local Psak Halacha by any individual Posek for those who accept his Psak. And therefore, the role of the Stamma was to take the concrete Piske Din with the authority of Sanhedrin, the Amoraic Hora'ah, and to translate it into an abstract conceptual framework which can be applied universally. And from that, individual Rabbanim in their various areas would derive their Piske Din for their communities. The stoma was basically attempting to save the universality of the of halakha by transposing the universality from a psak din of a Sanhedrin or a Sanhedrin authorized individual that would be obligatory on all of Israel to a svara that would be obligatory on all of Israel. And that would enable the different piskei din of rabbis in different places, even though they were not functioning with the hora of the Sanhedrin, to remain within at least a broad conceptual context that would be common. And Peter Beauregard from Berkeley is commenting, sort of like trying to create an expert system from discrete cases. Yes, that's exactly what it's doing. That's exactly what STUM is doing. And it's doing that because of its desire to maintain the integrity of a unified halakha in all places and at all times of the Galut, until such time as Am Yisrael should come back to Eretz Yisrael, reestablish itself as an Am Nivchar be'Eretz Nivcheret, Sanhedrin would be set up, and the Sanhedrin would pick up exactly where the Sanhedrin left off. And the conceptualizations developed by the stoma would or would not bind it as it decides at that time. And Eliyahu Gerstel from Toronto is saying, using Rambam's concepts of halakha as being based upon a series of principles in each mitzvah of, I don't see the rest of your remark, Rav Eliyahu, please, if you could complete your remark. When you say that the Rambam has a concept of halakha as being based on a series of principles, everyone held that. All Rishonim held that halakha was based on principles. And so did, I imagine, all of the Gaonim and all the Savoraim and all the Amoraim. We're talking here really on a literary level of how these things are handed down and treated, as opposed to philosophically, whether they related to concepts or not. In any event, I hope all of you understand the methodological points that came out of the sugya, both of the idea of Amoraic renditions and the issue of the sugya mul beshet, and how the stoma de gemara is functioning in Perusha Memra to conceptualize piskei din of Amoraim. Let's move on. If you take a look in our sugya, from component number 23, Eliyahu Gerstel has now completed his remark. He says, Taryag, can the concepts of the stoma be binding but only the Amoraic dinim? And if so, can in theory someone disagree with the stoma? Okay, that's a very, very important question. And I'd like to relate to that so that we do not have any lack of clarity on it. Rav Eliyahu, the issue is like this. The stoma, the concepts of the stoma become binding when the stoma de Gemara becomes accepted by Klal Yisrael as part of the Torah Shebaal Peh Masorah. That is, we don't know who edited the stoma de Gemara that's in the Bavli today. We know who edited the Amoraim. It's either Ravina and Rav Ashi, or Ravina bar Ravuna and Rav Asi, but two generations apart. But it doesn't matter. We know that there were individuals who edited the Amoraic components. They are Sof Hora'ah. We don't know, on a personality level, who edited the stoma de Gemara. But somehow it was edited and placed in our Gemara, and became accepted by all of the Gaonim and all of the Rishonim. It was accepted by Klal Yisrael. And when the stoma de Gemara becomes accepted by Klal Yisrael, it becomes binding on Klal Yisrael in the same way that the Amoraim did, not by force of Sanhedrin, but by force of Klal Yisrael accepting it. Remember, where does the power of Sanhedrin come from? It comes from Klal Yisrael, from the Kedushah of Am Yisrael. So if the Kedushah of Am Yisrael can give Koach to a Sanhedrin, the Kedushah of Am Yisrael can also give Kedushah and universality to the stoma de Gemara, and it did so. So therefore, by the time you get to the period of the Rishonim, the stoma de Gemara is taken for granted as being Mechayev Klal Yisrael. And if you ask, can in theory someone disagree with the stoma, a person can suggest that the stoma de Gemara may have interpreted the Amoraim for more than what it originally intended. One can say that, and one can suggest pshat in a sukya that may be different than what the stoma de Gemara said, but that has no impact whatsoever on the fact that the stoma de Gemara as it stands is mechayev klal Yisrael halacha. Because when you suggest that maybe the pshat in the sugya, on the Amoraic sugya, is different than what the stoma de Gemara said, as I did, in this sugya where I said that the overlaid sugya was interpreting the Amoraim differently than what they originally intended, that's only in the context of limud hasugya. It doesn't have any implications lahalacha because we don't paskin halacha from the pshat of the Amoraim sugya anymore. Our halacha is built on the Shulchan Aruch, which is based on the diunim of the Rishonim, which are based on the Masorah they received from the Gaonim and the Stam of the Gemara itself. And therefore, it doesn't matter one way or another whether the Stam of the Gemara is interpreting the Amoraim according to their pshat or not. The Stam of the Gemara will still be mechayev lahalacha, but it's interesting from a point of limud to study the sugyot with the separation of the layers, to do rivadim, as it were, on the sugyot, because it gives us greater clarity on who is contributing what to the halachic process. What did the Amoraim contribute? What did the Stam of the Gemara contribute? How did our halacha, which is binding on all of Israel today, how was it formed through these different layers? And when Sanhedrin is reestablished, Be'ezrat Hashem, Be'karov, Be'ameinu, that when the Sanhedrin is reestablished in Eretz Yisrael, and it looks back on all of the precedents from previous Sanhedrinim and all of the conceptualizations and abstractions done by the Stam of the Gemara, which became halacha in Klal Yisrael, the Sanhedrin will establish at that time what its policy is about the binding nature of halachot that were created outside of the context of Sanhedrin. And we have no idea today what they will do at that time. Peter Beauregard is asking, also in our case here, the Bavli by Svara came to the same conclusion as the Rishalmi, which seems to validate self-correcting nature and correct application of principle. Well, Peter, the Bavli did not come to the same conclusion as the Rishalmi necessarily, because the Rishalmi came to the conclusion, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that a person can cancel a shlichut that he made with another statement. That is, Adam mivatela shlichuto badvarim. But the Bavli came to a very different conclusion. He came to the conclusion that in all cases, Dibur is mevatel Dibur, because we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, the Bavli is much more far-reaching than Yerushalmi. It's taking the principle and applying it much greater range than what we had before. So, in that sense, the Yerushalmi was much more limited, much more concrete, and the Bavli much more abstract and more conceptual. Are there any other questions on this before we proceed with the tail end of this sugya? Beginning with component number 23, the Stam of the Gemara paskins like Rabbi Yochanan. Hilchata kavateta Rabbi Yochanan vefidu bekamaita. That the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, even in the former case, meaning even in the former rendition, where we have a woman accepting kesef kiddushin and then changing her mind, even in that case we would paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. V'afol gav di'ikad le'memar shani netina ma'ot li'ad isha de'kema'aseh dame afilu hachi ati dibor mevatel dibor. That even though there is room to say that the acceptance of the money by the woman is like a ma'aseh, nevertheless we would say that her change of her mind is acceptable. It's not enough of a ma'aseh to make it impossible for her to change her mind. She can change her mind as long as the kiddushin is not effective. And at this point, the Gemara says, wait a minute, if you're going to paskin like Rabbi Yochanan in both cases, then kashya hilchotah hilchotah. We have this stira between two piskei halacha. You see, what is the stomach doing now? It's taking all these piskei halacha that have been decided in the period of the Amoraim, and is trying to unify them all into what we would call an integrated field theory. And if you have two individual piskei halacha that seem to disagree, they have to be resolved. So the Gemara does that. It says, on the one hand, Amrat Hilchata Krav Yochanan, Kaimalan Hilchata Krav Nachman, that here you've said that halacha is like Rav Yochanan, but we also have a general principle that halacha is like Rav Nachman, the Ibayelahu, because it was asked as follows, Maushiach Zor Viagareshbo. This get that was cancelled by the man after he sent it, can he be Megaresh again with that or not? Rav Nachman Amar Choseru Megareshbo, Rav Sheshet Amar Enu Choseru Megareshbo, but Kaimalan Hilchat Kavateta Rav Nachman. And so this would imply that even though the man has cancelled the use of the get is still good. The man has not been successful with his dibur in cancelling the get. That would imply that we have a stira, a contradiction between a psak like Rabbi Yochanan in our case and the psak like Rav Nachman in the case of the get. So what do we do with that? So the Gemara resolves this contradiction by saying, Nehi debatle mitorat shaliach mitorat yet lo betale, that it's true that he canceled the agency of the man to deliver the get. He didn't cancel the get itself. The get itself is fine and can be used again. But the agency to deliver that get was canceled. And therefore, what the Gemara has succeeded in doing, the Stamma de Gemara, it has resolved the potential sira, contradiction between two piskei din, has resolved them one to the other. And therefore, the integrated system of halakha from all sugyot and from all periods can be maintained. So I hope in these first few lessons we've understood a little bit better what the Stamma de Gemara is doing and how it operates in this sugya as a completely separate level, where it, although it bases itself on Torat Amoraim, it is not bound by Torat Amoraim. And here Bill Gewurz for medicine is asking two questions. Number one, my assertion about Klal Yisrael as the decisor is based on RYBS Yortzeit, and there are other such sources. Well, what I said is I'm not familiar with that Yortzeit Shir, but I'm glad that I was mechaven to Dat Gedolim, to Rav Soloveitchik's Yortzeit Shir. If I did, that's, I'm very happy about that. But I came to it from other sources. And number two, there are a number of instances where Rishonim interpreted either statements differently. Not common, I assume. Well, there are individual cases where Rishonim will say that a certain piece of Stamma de Gemara is late, and that they will interpret the Gemara differently. There are about 200 places like that. I have a document which lists all 200 places where Rishonim say that a certain piece of Gemara is very late. If any of you want that, you can send me an email and I'll send it to you. But in addition to that, there are cases where certain Rishonim will paskin against the Stamma. There are about, I know of about a dozen cases in the Rambam in Seder Nashim. They were collected by Rav Meir Simcha Feldblum in one of his articles. There are other cases that other Rishonim paskin against the Stamma, but it is rare. Mr. Gewurz from Ed is saying, Shnei Minei Misurot is the Shir. Very controversial. Okay, well, if anyone has a copy of that Shir, either in writing or in audio, I would appreciate them sending it to me so I can understand the Rov's logic. It's in the book. Which book? Which book, Mr. Gewurz? But I don't understand what would be so controversial about it, because it seems to me, volume one of the Yortzeit Shiurim. Okay, thank you very much. I'll try and look it up. In the meantime, the principle of what Stamma de Gemara is doing, that's conceptualizing, and that we have Amorei components and Stamma components at a later date, I think it's something that's so obvious. I mean, with my staff, we've checked all 10,000, approximately 10,000 sugyot of the Bavli, and it's quite obvious that the Stamma de Gemara represents another layer of interpretation. The article by Rav Meir Simcha Feldblum is it's reprinted. I have the reprint. Where was it originally printed? That's a very good question. I'm not sure, but you can. I can, when I go back to Israel on Thursday, broadcast to you next Sunday, I'll be back in Israel and I'll be able to check. I have it in my library and I'll give you that information. But you can also go on to Rambi, the Rishimat Ma'amarim Bemadei Yadut, and track it down that way, and it'll say where it was originally printed. But if you remind me next Sunday when we speak, I'll be able to do that. Please send examples to, well, Mr. Gewurz, if you could. If you could please just send me an email, a personal email, to my email address at bonaich, bonaych, at 012.net.il, and then I will send back to you the file of the 200 places where the Rishonim say that a piece of stomach to Gemara is late. But we shouldn't take, even when the Rishonim do that in 200 places, that's a drop in the bucket, they're not referring to the general stomach to Gemara. The general stomach to Gemara is, as I mentioned, from the very end of the Amoraic or beginning of Savoraic periods, whereas these 200 places that the Rishonim are talking about are from the period of the Gaonim, like from Rav Yudai Gaon, who is 200 years later. So we shouldn't say that the Rishonim mention it because they are very unusual and not to be taken as representative of the Stamba de Gemara on a normative basis. Okay, at this point we have finished the sugya, we have another question from Teddy in Brooklyn. At the end of the discussion, the Stamba is very specific about whether the Achaz like Rabbi Yochanan, in addition to conceptualizing Dibur, cancel Dibur. Well, Teddy, that's exactly the point. What is the Stamma saying in number 23? When it says halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, it's paskening halacha in the specific case in our sugya, but it's also saying that we have a general principle of halacha like Rabbi Yochanan. So in number 23 gimel, halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan and halacha is like Rav Nachman. In other words, we have now klalei hora that are running up against each other. They're butting up against each other and causing friction in the system. And therefore, the klalei hora have to be adjusted also to each other so that they can coexist. Okay, in any event, we have finished this lesson on this sugya. Next week, we will begin sugya number 3, which is Mikudeshet Lasheni, Rav and Shmuel, and I hope that you'll have an opportunity to prepare that sugya, so we'll be able to go over it when we meet next week at this time. So I want to wish you all Chanukah Sameach, as we have several days left, and Chodesh Tov, Monday is Rosh Chodesh. And Jeff Cooperman, Cheryl is saying, Rav Pinchas, can you perhaps be Mizorez, the eating staff, to get your previous Shurim up and available? Only the first one is posted. Okay, well, I'm sure that our technical support has heard that comment, and I will send them an email as well and ask them to do so. Thank you for the point. And Shima from Brooklyn, thank you. Hanukkah Sameach. Be well, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Kol Tuv.